Seven cops in Rochester, New York are suspended in the investigation of the death in police custody of Daniel Prude. Former Vice President Joe Biden on facts and education. He meets with the family in Kenosha. And Kayleigh McEnany on the president's threat to defund American cities that vote Democrat. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Thursday, September 3rd, 2020. Wall Street's main indexes closed sharply lower on Thursday, marking their deepest one-day dives in months as investors dumped the high-flying technology sector, while economic data highlighted concerns about a long and difficult recovery. The technology-centric NASDAQ led the declines as its heavyweight stocks took a hit, with the biggest drags from companies including Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, and Google parent Alphabet. Analysts predicted the volatility in the stock market was a result of uncertainty just 60 days before a divisive election. Earlier in the day, data showed the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits fell more than expected last week to 881,000, but remained at historic highs. And the mayor of Rochester, New York, the state's third largest city, suspended at least seven police officers involved in the suffocation death of Daniel Prude last March. Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren said, "Mr. Daniel Prude was failed by the police department, our mental health care system, our society, and he was failed by me." Prude, 41, known to his Chicago-based family as Rel, died March 30th when his family took him off of life support. His death came 7 days after police put a so-called spit bag over his head. The entire killing was recorded on police body cameras, including the scene when cops came across the emotionally disturbed man nearly naked in the street. On Wednesday, Prude's family, for the first time, released body camera footage of the incident.
Hey, get on the ground. Get on the ground. Get on the ground. Get on the ground. Get on the ground, man. Get on the ground. Put your hands behind your back. Behind your back. Yes, don't move. Yes. Don't move. Yes, chill out, man. Don't move, all right, man?
Yes,
just don't
sir.
Move.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, you can take your mask off.
One male in custody.
I'm gonna shoot the shit out of you. Jesus Christ, I pray.
And that's Prude being handcuffed on the ground, and he was handcuffed from the very beginning of this confrontation. Prude then starts rolling on the ground, begging the officers to remove a spit hood that was put at, as he allegedly had threatened to spit on the officers, or that he had COVID. Not that he was going to spit, but he had COVID, and the police allegedly put the bag over his head, a bag that has been criticized by its use in other cities, including London. The officers surround him as one place places his hands on Prude's head and another puts his knee on Prude's back to hold him down. He eventually began vomiting, according to cops recorded at the scene.
Puking?
For a male silent night.
Oh, he's puking. Just straight water. You see all that water came out of his mouth?
No, I didn't. No.
This is all water. My man, you puking? Oh, look at this.
Oh my God. I saw the ambulance coming, so I moved in.
That's your problem now.
And yes, your eyes, your ears did not deceive you. That was the sound of the officers laughing as Mr. Prude vomited and was expiring in front of them. A medical examiner concluded that Prude's death was a homicide caused by complications of asphyxia in the setting of physical restraint. New York Attorney General Letitia James's office took over the investigation of the death in April. It is an ongoing investigation. Protesters demonstrated Wednesday at the police headquarters building in Rochester and at the spot where Prude died. Meanwhile, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden met with the family of Jacob Blake today, who was shot 7 times by a cop in front of his 3 children, but remains alive in a Kenosha, Wisconsin hospital. Biden said education was the key to solving America's 400-year racial problem, and this election was the opportunity to make change.
Why in God's name don't we teach history in history classes? A black man invented the light bulb, not a white guy named Edison. Okay? There's so much. Did anybody know before what recently happened? that Black Wall Street in Oklahoma was burned to the ground? Anybody know these things? We act because we don't teach them. We got to give people facts. Teach them what's out there. I think there is a chance for a real awakening here. And the point is, I don't think we have any alternative but to fight. I don't think we have any alternative but to fight back. I don't think we have other alternative than just go tell the truth. Just tell the truth. There's a lot of folks who thought that, well, the president's made great strides with his law and order strides here. That boy, after his convention, he really, really made inroads. He hasn't. Not at all. No, I'm not serious. I'm being, it should give you a little bit of confidence in the American people.
Joe Biden at Grace Lutheran Church in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Joe and wife Jill Biden made their next stop in Wauwatosa to visit with a special education teacher and mother. The informal roundtable discussion centered on the obstacle of working parents, low-income families with limited wireless access, and parents who can't afford to hire tutors as they struggle to navigate virtual learning. Also today, Vice President Mike Pence gave a speech surrounded by uniformed police officers at a Cops for Trump rally in North Carolina.
This president and this vice president, our administration, this senator, and these great members of Congress will always stand with the men and women of law enforcement. We will always back the blue.
Vice President Pence. But a retired NYPD executive officer, that's a number two in a precinct, Corey Pegues, tells WBAI, the problem isn't lack of aggression by cops, but the use of police as first responders when emotionally disturbed people are at risk.
Police officers are not really trained to deal with these type of situations. You have to understand, they do get training, but it's at a very minimal scale. 6 months in the police academy, they got to get use of force training, domestic violence training, gun training, emotionally disturbed persons training, which would be this case here. So they're just getting blocks of training, and you have trained professionals that deal with these situations every day. They got master's degrees to deal with emotionally disturbed people.
Take LSD and have a panic attack, and the police came. They took him to the emergency room. They shot him with Thorazine, and he was home that night. End of story. Why can't it be that easy?
Society has to realize police are in the business of putting people in jail. That's what police officers do. They're in the business of locking people up, no matter how people want to spin it, protect and serve. Officers are in the business of locking people up. And at the end of the day, they actually want to get home safe like everybody else. So you're supposed to only use the least amount of force when dealing with these type of situations. And it looks as if when you have like four or five cops there, every one of these instances around America, it doesn't look like one cop is taking command or control. I look at this incident, they're laughing, they're joking, they're cracking jokes about what's going on. This is serious. These are serious issues. And when you have police officers that where you're not really investigating them and drilling them down, drilling down these investigations and make sure you have somebody with the mental mindset of an adult that could really deal with situations. But it didn't seem like these were mature cops that responded to the location.
What about race? Did race have something to do with this, do you think?
Race has something to do with every case. It's America. America is racism everywhere. Now, I'm not saying that they put the bag over him because he was a black man. We're looking around America, all of these things are happening in black and brown communities. So race is always at the top of the spectrum when you're looking at these cases. But I don't think it played a major part in this. And then when you have to look and see if it was a white male that they had cuffed, that was sitting on the ground, wasn't opposing a threat to himself or others, would they have went over there, put a bag on his head, and pretty much killed him like George Floyd? This was George Floyd before George Floyd. This was before George Floyd, right?
I was watching the Attorney General yesterday. I've heard this from law enforcement on several occasions, that quoting Jesse Jackson, if I walked down the street and I saw five black people behind me, I'd be scared too. That black people are criminal more than white people, and therefore you have to be more on guard, and that's what causes this. It's not because of racism. What do you say to that?
The bottom line is this. Everyone should be treated equally. Black, brown, white, whatever the ethnic race is, everyone should be treated equally. But when you look at American history, they have made the black man the boogeyman. That's just what it is. They have everything bad is black. From black eyes to black clothes, you know, a bunch of black people hanging out together. Everything black is just bad. So if we could root that out and look at everybody as equal, because in black communities, do we have some criminals? Of course we do. But I worked in a white community. We had, and all the people that was committing crime were white people in the white community, but they don't say white on white crime. Black people have become the boogeyman in America. Then cops see that sometimes cops are doing things and it's a slap on the wrist. And so, yeah, that's the mindset of most cops. They're dealing with the black and brown community. It's not right.
What should be done? What can be done?
What should be done is that these officers should be held accountable for the death of this young man who had some drugs inside of him and was acting a little irrational, but I don't think that what he did required a death sentence. So they should be held accountable for their actions, as well as the police officials who viewed this footage months ago. You can't tell me they just viewed it 2 days ago and released the footage. And what should happen across America is that black and brown people should be respected in all facets of life, especially dealing with the police. Police have a serious, serious issue on their hands, and it's not going away. It's almost like being an alcoholic, Paul. You understand? You have to go to an AA meeting, raise your hand, and say, my name is Corey Pegues. I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. So policing around America needs to raise their hand and say, we have a problem with policing the black and brown community, and we need help. And that's what we need to get the dialogue started. Dialogue is the key to fixing this whole thing. But you have to be honest. If you're not going to be honest, you're going to keep having these same incidents over and over and over again.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
I'm tired. And like I say on every single interview all across America, this won't be the last. And it's sad to say.
Corey Pegues is author of Once a Cop. He's a retired executive officer in the NYPD. He's also a speaker for the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, or LEAP, which bills itself as the only organization of law enforcement advancing real solutions to transform America's police and criminal justice system. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Donald Trump ordered the federal government to begin the process of defunding New York City, Washington, D.C., Seattle, and Portland. He said this is because of the protests and violence in the cities. In his memo, he says, my administration will not allow federal tax dollars to fund cities that allow themselves to deteriorate into lawless zones. Trump says in the memo, which twice mentions New York Mayor Bill de Blasio by name, to ensure that federal funds are neither unduly wasted nor spent in a manner that directly violates our government's promise to protect life, liberty, and property, it's imperative that the federal government review the use of federal funds by jurisdictions that permit anarchy, violence, and destruction in America's cities. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo slammed the president. He says from the point of view of New York City, this has been the worst president in history.
President Trump has actively been trying to kill New York City ever since he's been elected. And it's a personal animus, as it normally is with the president. I think it's because he is from New York City, and New York City rejected him, always. He was dismissed as a clown in New York City. Those who know him best like him least. That's true about New York City. It's true about his own family. And I think that's more and more clear to Americans. He's going to defund New York City. Everything that he could possibly do in his power to hurt New York City, he has done. Look, the best thing he did for New York City was leave. Good riddance, Let them go to Florida. Be careful not to get COVID.
Governor Andrew Cuomo speaking today. White House spokesperson Kayleigh McEnany outlined Trump's order threatening to defund these Democrat-run cities.
This is more of the same.
The president believes that what we should do, that the purpose of government is to protect life, liberty, and property. That is the purpose of the federal government, and it's imperative that the federal government review the use of funds by jurisdiction. So what this does, this memo, it really does three things. One, it asks federal agencies to detail all federal funds that are being provided to Seattle, Portland, New York City, and Washington, D.C. Secondly, within 14 days, the attorney general will develop a list of anarchist jurisdictions, of lawlessness zones that are permitting violence and destruction of property. And then within 30 days, the White House budget director will issue guidance to the heads of agencies on restricting eligibility of or otherwise disfavoring to the maximum extent possible by law anarchist jurisdictions in the receipt of federal grants. And South Carolina v. Dole did note that you can withhold funding so long as it pertains to the federal program pertains to what you're trying to incentivize. So we believe here, when you look at New York, a 177% increase in shootings, in Seattle, where there was a lawless chop zone where two died, in Portland, where you've seen 140 officers injured, this is a dereliction of duty. And if the states will not act in their police power and secure their streets, this president will use every lawful mechanism available to him to try to supplement their failures. And in some cases, that's meant federal officers in Minneapolis and Kenosha, where we've been invited. This is yet another attempt to make sure no more children like Legend Taliaferro die on our streets.
These are congressionally appropriated funds. I expect that you would expect there to be immediate legal action taken. Letitia James, the Attorney General for the state of New York, warned a few minutes ago that if you try to withhold any funds, she will immediately slap you with a lawsuit.
Well, she's free to do that. We believe that what we will do will be lawful within the bounds of the law, and we encourage states to act and cities to act in the way that Kenosha and Minneapolis did, although be it delayed a little bit there, they finally stepped up and asked for federal support, and they got it, because too many Americans are dying on our streets, too many businesses being burned to the ground. That's not the American way by a long shot.
Okay, yes. Just to follow up on that, the president, as we know, tried to withhold federal money from sanctuary cities, and he lost, as per the courts. So why isn't this also doomed to fail?
I'm not going to get ahead of exactly what the final product will look like. Again, I just walked you through, there's a 14-day timeline for the DOJ, and then a 30-day timeline for Office of Management and Budget, but we believe that we are on the right here.
And that's White House spokesperson Kayleigh McEnany. Brooklyn Representative Yvette Clark, speaking early today, had this to say about Trump's threat.
This is more of the same, the threats, the lack of character, him targeting New York City alongside many of the other major municipalities is a partisan move on his part. He's already said that he's focused on blue states. We need to stay focused on navigating our city through this crisis. He does not have the authority to defund any cities in this nation. And we will certainly use every authority we have in the Congress to make sure that he does not begin manipulating federal agencies in terms of how funds that we're due are disrupted in any form or fashion. So listen, we are unfortunately dealing with someone who has demonstrated a lack of capacity to lead. And in this climate, we need leadership that will navigate our nation through this pandemic.
And that's Brooklyn Representative Yvette Clark. Kevin Alexander Gray is a civil rights organizer in South Carolina. He co-edited Killing Trayvons, an anthology of American violence, which scrutinizes the impunity of perpetrators of violence to African Americans in United States society. He says the problem with police violence in America is a result of 400 years of oppression of black people.
Everything that we see, the denial of racism, the denial of white supremacy and white skin privilege, the continued exploitation of people of color and denial of due process, equal protection and equal treatment rights and economic fairness rights of people of color. It is part and parcel of our society and of our culture. All we're doing now, as someone once said, is now it's being filmed, and now people at this point in history are dealing with it in a different way, not so dissimilar from the ways that the abolitionists fought. Bear in mind that the most folk that died in wars in this nation have been people that fought against each other for the preservation of the institution of enslavement.
That's exactly what concerns me, because the denial is so disturbing. And when you grow up a white American, and if you have any sort of sensitivity and read any sort of books about the subject, if for no other reason, and you confronted with people who you would think would be more intelligent and would know better, who absolutely deny this reality.
What we have to do, as we have done throughout the years, is to continue to build a movement, a progressive movement that isn't based on violence and hate, but is based on what Dr. King called the beloved community. A progressive movement is a multiracial, multiethnic, multigender, multigenerational effort. It's bringing together allies that seek common ground, that want to see a country that's free of the notion that there's one group of people that have extraordinary rights, that this is not a country that's based on the idea of white man's country, that's a land of descendants of enslaved Africans, descendants of colonists and settlers, descendants of victims of genocide, immigrants. That is what America is. It isn't and has never been a white man's country.
King, the right-wing fascistic congressman out in Iowa, have trillions of bullets, and all they don't even know what bathroom to use. The impression being, they're ready. Are we ready?
No one can win a race war. And I saw something in passing today, as you see these things in your social feeds, people hope for a race war so they can avoid a class war. But this isn't 1930. It isn't 1830, 1860, where folk could think that they're just going to kill people and terrorize people as they did when they really had the powers of government that operated under the premise that a black person or a person of color had no rights that a white person was bound to respect. We're not there anymore. But the other part of it is, who are our enemies? Who are we going to kill? If the other side thinks that there's going to be a blue and a gray, or blue and a red that lines up, that's not going to be the case. It's just going to show America's weakness.
We're just weakening ourselves regarding America's adversaries internationally.
This has all made us very weak. Now, in one respect, I'm glad to see that U.S. troops are leaving some of these bases around the world, and we're no longer going to try to be the policemen of the world. I think that four more years of this present administration creates grave danger for a lot of people in this country, because no doubt that the Trump administration has emboldened those people who believe that this is a white man's country and believe that they can strike fear into the hearts of people, to include police officers who have a white supremacist, white nationalist ideology, who are hiding behind that blue shield. And that 39% that supports this president, his base, if they think they can win that type of battle, they are fooling themselves.
Kevin Alexander Gray is a civil rights organizer in South Carolina. He was chair of Jesse Jackson's presidential campaign in the state. And finally, this weekend is Labor Day, but the usual events, especially the Caribbean Day Parade in Brooklyn and its all-night cousin event, Juve, are not going to be held, or at least they're going to be held by computer, as everything else has been on the various different computer online services. And Representative Yvette Clark, who represents Brooklyn, parts of Brooklyn, urged folks to stay at home.
I want to talk a bit about one of the traditions here in Central Brooklyn, which has been a pre-dawn event that many of us have really highly regarded, and that is called the Juve celebration. This year, again, like Carnival, we are moving to a virtual platform. And as I have encouraged everyone to keep Carnival in their hearts and partake in the virtual activities that are taking place, likewise for Juve. That pre-dawn event has been a tradition for many, many years. And we want to make sure that while we partake of a commemoration of Caribbean culture and Caribbean contribution to our city and its rich legacy to the Caribbean community, that we want also safety. Unfortunately, across this nation, we are seeing a spike in gun violence. And we are not immune to that here in Central Brooklyn, in the area, unfortunately, where Juve and Carnival has been celebrated. We want families to be safe. We want the community to be safe. We want to leave the space for law enforcement to continue to keep us safe by not congregating, not creating these spaces where unscrupulous shooters could harm life and limb. So I want to encourage everyone today. Today would traditionally be the beginning of the carnival season. Tune into WIACA, who are doing a whole host of events online. You can celebrate from your home, socially distant. Likewise for Juve, I know that Juve International is planning a wonderful virtual commemoration of Juve. And if we are all in this together, we know that we will conquer COVID-19. Next year, in 2021, we can look forward to being with one another once again in a spectacular, spectacular expression of Caribbean culture and Caribbean pride.
Representative Yvette Clark. And that's some of the news for Thursday, September 3rd, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson from New York City. I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News. Thanks for listening.